This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident with me, Dave Hill, the pride of Cleveland and beyond. I once got a complimentary blow dry at a main attraction down there in Orlando. And thanks to Donna, if you're listening. Anyway, thank you for joining me once again. If this sounds a little weird, this intro and outro, that's because I'm all alone. And somehow I can't figure out how to get the slick new microphones we bought to work. So I'm recording this into my iPhone just to keep the train on the tracks. The show must go on, all that sort of thing. But that's why it sounds different. Maybe it sounds incredible. I don't know. Probably not, let's be honest. But my partner in crime, technical whiz, Chris Gersbeck, will, I'm sure, sort this out for me. I probably should have just called him, had me walk him through it. Or had him walk me through it, is what I meant to say. I'm on a lot of medications, cold medicines right now. The plague-like symptoms continue. Thank you to all of you for your concern. I know I said I had plague-like symptoms last episode, and a lot of people wrote and said, you know, they hoped I got well soon and all that sort of thing. And it's not quite the plague. Honestly, it's just a head cold that I can't seem to be able to shake. I think largely because I licked doorknobs and such. But hopefully I'll be back on top soon enough. But enough about me. How are you doing? Thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone for subscribing, rating, and reviewing on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever, Spotify, wherever you get your incredible podcast. And please rate and review as much as you can, even if it's scathing. Because supposedly it just helps get the word out, and then, you know, our podcasting empire can't be stopped, basically. And that's the plan, is to take over a modest patch of real estate in the podcasting universe. Not too much, you know? We're not crazy. Anyway, so thank you for that, and thanks to everyone who's been supporting us on Patreon. Lots of Patreon-only subscriber episodes been going out lately. Lots, which is to say several. I think two or three. More coming. But go there, patreon.com/Dave Hill, and unlock a treasure trove of incredible bonuses, gifts, and bonus content, and good karma and whatnot by helping us keep gas in the tank and all that. With this podcast and helping us grow this incredible podcasting empire, really. We have a couple tricks up our sleeve, I'm not going to lie to you. What those tricks are, I don't know. They don't tell me. No, there are. We're working on them. Trust me. But I'm just rambling. It wouldn't kill me to stay on point here. We have an incredible episode for you today, which I'm going to get into in a second. Did I beg you to help us out on Patreon? Patreon.com/Dave Hill. PATREON.com. But what I wanted to say is tomorrow, if you're listening to this on March 1st, the day it comes out, tomorrow, March 2nd, I'm going to be in Minneapolis. I've just been added to the Live From Here show with Chris Teeley, which broadcasts all over the United States on NPR affiliates, public radio, and whatnot. And then you can, of course, hear it all over the world, livefromhere.org. But it's going to be a great show. Broken Social Scene are going to be doing it also. I'm going to be doing it, which I just said. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be other incredible guests. Tom Papa, of course, one of my favorite comedians in the world, and a dear friend. And he said we could totally have a quality hang after the show, so I'm looking forward to that, too. Also, if you're in New York City, every Wednesday in March, with the exception of the 20th, we'll be doing You had to be there at QED in Astoria. That's me, Jody Lennon, and Jim Biederman. This fun, new, weird, and exciting comedy show that all the kids are talking about. Come on out. We're going to be doing it in April as well. And it's the best, funnest live show in Queens, at least, at the very least in Queens. Perhaps all of New York City. I leave that up to you to decide its greater relevance. But let's get into it. It's freezing outside. Did I mention that? I'm ever so cold. But today's guest is Ted Alexandro. I've known Ted, I think, since I started in comedy, or at least I saw him from afar. I was probably too afraid to approach him at first, you know, when I was just a pretty young thing, new in town from Cleveland, Ohio. But Ted is one of the funniest human beings on earth and a delightful man. And I learned a lot. I knew a little bit about him. I mostly knew his, you knew him from being on stage and, you know, when I'd run into him. But did you know he's a trained jazz pianist? Well, now I do too. And you're going to hear about that and other incredible things in this episode we're about to get into. Strap yourselves in for the thrill ride. Ted came over to my house, and it went a little something like this. Are we ready to pot it up? Oh shit! I apologize in advance for any Lucy interruptions.
Perfectly understandable.
She's got her fans though.
Yeah,
which has made us not do the obvious thing and get a dog walker or something, because she's, you know,
part of the show.
Yeah, the listeners, they can't get in this with these new mics.
Yeah,
this is
we pick it all up.
Yeah, it's like an, you know, dog ASMR thing. But thanks for coming over.
My pleasure, man.
I was I've known you for a number of years, and but I realize I just know you as a hilarious comedian, man about town. But in my tireless research, you're a jazz musician.
Well, in quotations, yeah. I studied jazz piano at CCNY for 2 years, and then I took a year off and studied independently with a teacher one on one for another year. And then I kind of made a left turn and got my teaching degree and taught music. But yeah, I was like really heavily into that for about 3 years.
That's awesome. That's like, that's the sort of thing I read. I'm like, and I'm just like, oh man, I'm garbage.
No, you're not. You haven't heard me play. You're not garbage. When I came out of high school, I had this sense like that I wanted to be in the arts, but I didn't know like what to do. So when I was deciding on college, like my high school had this elderly nun who was the guidance counselor, or whatever they call that, career counselor.
Yeah, yeah. And you went to like Catholic high school.
I went to St. Francis Prep. Yeah,
and that's in Queens,
Fresh Meadows, Queens. Yeah, yeah. I had gone to public school up until then, and then. I think my grandparents like wanted us to go, like they paid for it, so we went to all five of my siblings wound up going to this. It was a good school, but it was a little bit of like kind of culture shock after going to public school for 8 years.
Yeah, I assumed, because I was like, oh, he must be like me, like Catholic, everything. Because I'm assuming you're like a raised Catholic or a
raised
baptized
Catholic,
or whatever.
Raised Catholic, all that. Yeah, my parents were active in the church. You know, they did like marriage encounter for married couples. And they did pre-Cana for engaged couples and stuff. But I think I'm fortunate in that, like, I never found my parents, religion or involvement with the church off-putting. Because I found them to be like people who kind of just practiced what they preached and lived in a way that I found, admirable. And like, yeah, so they were like, church was kind of part of our lives, but not in some sort of culty or, kind of a repressive holier than thou way.
Right. Yeah. So, that's sort of the same, same sort of upbringing, but I went to, we were, but it was, I guess, more aggressive in that I went to like Catholic kindergarten, grade school, high school, college. Like I barely knew anyone who wasn't Catholic until like I would see like, oh, those people aren't Catholic. But I probably till after college is when I actually like, oh, like making friends outside of like Catholic world.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, yeah, it was, for me, I was kind of straddling both because I would go to like CCD Sunday school and we would go to church. My parents were involved, all that kind of stuff. And I did like theater, like they had like a theater group in the summer. So I did like, you know, Grease and all
this
kind of
stuff. Who did you play?
Danny Zuko.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I did all that stuff for a number of summers. But I was going to public school, so I felt as though, like, there, it was like, you know, just a real array of, yeah, different religions. I went to classmates' bar mitzvahs. I went to, you know, over kids' houses that were all different races, creeds, faiths, whatever. So it was like my public school friendships and just being in that world, like, kind of set me up so that when I went to Catholic high school, that felt so homogeneous that it was like, and also like the kids were all like filtered from, they would all come, I don't know if this was your experience, but they would all come from one parish. So there'd be like 20 kids from this parish, 40 kids from that parish. And I was like the only kid from my school. So it was like, it was a little like kind of starting fresh and not knowing anyone. You know?
Yeah, yeah, because all the sort of the gangs are established or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a total, yeah, I didn't know, you just mentioned bar mitzvahs, like, I didn't know, I've still never been to, I'm assuming there are a lot of bar mitzvahs in my future, because now everyone's having kids and stuff, but I've never went to one growing up, and I remember Nick Kroll, at least 10 years ago, did a show, Bar Mitzvah Disco, and I was in the show, and everyone in the show was, would people do, like, bits about their bar mitzvah. And I was like, I played like his fog machine operator. And but after the shows, everyone would be like, ask me questions about my bar mitzvah. And I'm just like, I literally have no idea what's going on. Like, I've never, I have a vague sense of what's happening during this whole show.
Yeah.
But so what made you, I guess, so you started doing comedy though, shortly, I guess, after college?
Well, actually during, because when I left CCNY and left jazz piano, I went to Queens College, a little closer to home, and started getting my education degree. So I had kind of a double major of music and education, elementary education. But there was also, like, in the drama department, they had a sketch comedy group, and I wound up making really good friends there. With the guy who kind of started, he founded the sketch comedy group, my friend Hollis James, who I still do stuff with now. But he and I really hit it off. And then we started kind of going to open mics. You know, we would go to, it was funny because as I was coming here, actually, I walked right by the Duplex.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to, I think our earliest shows were at the Duplex as a duo.
Yeah, we're in the upstairs room?
In the upstairs room.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the Duplex is like, that's where like Dick Cavett used to like do stand up and stuff.
It's such a hip, like historic spot.
Yeah, totally. Know? I've always wanted to, like, I wish there was like a weekly show there. So I'm like, oh, it'd be nice to just literally walk down the street.
You could probably just start one. I mean, like, because like when I, the one that I went to a lot, they had one called The Stars of Tomorrow that would start at like midnight or something like that on a Friday night. And you had to bring people and all this kind of stuff. But the good thing was both Hollis and I were from New York, from Queens, so we had no trouble rounding up if you had to bring 5 or 10 or whatever.
Nice.
All our college friends would want to come see what we were doing. And so that kind of gave us a leg up just in terms of like getting stage time. Anything where we had to bring people, we could usually do that, you know, so that helped.
Well, what made you want to go into education? Like,
you know,
shift from jazz.
Well, I think it was that I was kind of crestfallen that I saw the handwriting on the wall that I wasn't going to be a jazz pianist, because I had to, like, when I declared like being a music major, you had to choose either the jazz or the classical track.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I wasn't a classical pianist, and I had, you know, some passing familiarity with jazz. I was more just like kind of a, you know, I grew up playing like Stevie Wonder, Billy Joel, Elton John, a lot of pop, you know, and some blues, and kind of dipped my toe in these types of things. But I was by no means a jazz pianist. But I was like, yeah, jazz makes more sense too, if I have to declare a track. So then all of a sudden I was kind of just scuffling, you know, trying to keep up with, there were so many talented musicians in the program. So it was a good lesson in like just trying to stay afloat and working really hard, but never really being up to the task, you know. So there was disappointment and relief when I kind of said like, you know, I can't do this. Let me figure out plan B. So mm-hmm. with both of my parents having been teachers, my dad taught in Bushwick for 30 years, elementary school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and my mom was, after we had all, I'm one of five, so after all five of us had kind of gotten.
Same.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Where do you fall?
I'm second youngest.
Second youngest, yeah.
How about you?
Second oldest. Yeah. Three boys, two girls.
Three girls.
Three girls, two boys.
Two boys, yeah.
That's yeah.
Terrified of women.
So. yeah, we definitely had that dynamic too. Strong women.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but the thing was that when I declared, you know, like when I left CCNY and went to Queens, it was a little bit of kind of like, what do I do now? You know, like, am I just going to be a teacher like mom and dad are? And like, I want to be in the arts. And I didn't know, at that point, comedy wasn't really on the radar. It's like, I'm going to be a comedian. It was like, I knew I loved acting in plays, you know, and these mm-hmm. kind of community theater things. But I was like, you don't go to school for acting, do you? Like, I don't know. So then I got my teaching degree because I figured, at least I'll have a job while I try to figure out whatever's next.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the
point. And that's what I was, you know, sort of with your background being similar to mine. And I mean, was there sort of pressure to get like a proper job and be a contributing member of society and not go into show business, to use a sort of a blanket description?
The circus?
Yeah.
You know, I think, at least, I never got a real sense that my parents were pressuring me, like, one way or another. They were usually pretty supportive. I think that their approach was always, if they saw that you were somewhat grounded in reality and, mm-hmm. like, trying to figure something out, they didn't really kind of, you know, get involved. You know, they were pretty supportive. Like when I said, all right, I'm going to study jazz piano, they were totally supportive. And that meant that I was practicing scales in their house and practicing uh-huh. all the different, you know, things, 8 hours a day sometimes in
wow.
their house.
So you've got chops, I imagine. You'd have to studying jazz piano.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did it at some point. I probably have some of the remnants of that. But yeah, there was a time when I was like really working very hard. So I kind of fantasize about like if we ever have a house. You know, I'm sure you might have a similar fantasy.
I do, yeah. My fantasy is, yeah, absolutely.
A music room, a proper...
Yeah, like with vaulted ceilings where I'm just... Yeah, and you could have sort of a Phantom of the Opera scenario if you want.
That's right.
I mean, minus the creepy aspects. Or have them if you want.
Sure.
The creepy. No, but that's absolutely, like, do you ever, I think about that, like, yeah, because I'm like, I'm always like, yeah, eventually I'll have that place in the woods where with like a room with all my cool stuff and every poster I've saved. You know, that I can't leave the Dave Hill room that I'm planning for when I'm an old man. And then I start to go, like, I don't know, this might be it, Dave.
Like, you're in it.
You might just be, it might just be those poster tubes over there. And that's it. And then guitar in the living room, that's about as good. Which would be fine. Be fine.
Sure. You have to appreciate what you have, you know.
Yeah, but But no, I have that absolute always. Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, we'll go. But do you do this because you live in the city
in Astoria? So, yeah.
And so do you? Because we're around the same age, I think, and I have, like, you know, probably all your friends are doing the same thing where they, like, move out or they get, like, their weekend place. And I started going, like, I guess I should get a weekend place. But then I'll go to these places and they're great, but I'm just sort of, aside from the dog being able to run around, I'm sort of like, now what? What do we do now? Like, after like 3 hours, yes. I'm just like, we should go back to the city. Or do you feel the desire to?
It's funny you say that because, like, you know, having gotten married about a year and 4 months
ago. Yeah, I remember recently married.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of obviously shifts your perspective and shifts, like, your vision of, like, what your future will look like. And my wife is from New Jersey, but kind of grew up with more space and, like, you know, horses not too far away and just, like, nature, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm from Queens, so to me, it's nice, like you described it, it's nice when I'm there for a few hours, but I don't feel the sense of, like, this is where I need to be.
Yeah.
But I'm also at a stage where, you know, I'm ready for a change, and, you know, my wife loves that. So I feel like I've lived in Queens essentially my whole life, and if I can be within a couple of hours of the city, I look at it almost as like a new challenge or a new journey or a new kind of like, all right, let's figure this out. Like, what will my life and my career look like based wherever we are?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, because I feel, I sort of think in those terms because I'm just like, yeah, like what, because I'm at that point where I'm like, well, maybe I don't want to die in this apartment.
That's number one.
Unless it's very soon. No. Right. But yeah, I think about that a lot. Yeah, sort of like, what? How's this going to go? And, you know, and then I think like, yeah, I'll move to Vermont or something. And I'll like go hang out at the coffee shop in Vermont. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, my wife has two brothers up there with their families. So the template is kind of there, you know, and we visit them, you know, a few times a year. I don't want to go that far north, but yeah, you get a glimpse of like that other life, you know. So yeah, I do. I mean, I just turned 50 a couple weeks ago. So like there's a lot of like assessing almost of like, all right, like what will the next 10 years of my life look like or the remainder, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is, you know, because I'm hot on its trail.
Yeah.
And I sort of go like, yeah, like I've never been like mentally 15 some days or like 26 most days probably. And then I'm like, oh wait, like I've been a grown man for a long time. Do you ever have thoughts like that where you're like, oh, like this is like I'm just recently, and this is, you know, the basis of my therapy pretty much is like trying to like get it into my head that I'm like, I have been an adult for a very long time. And then now I'm like, but do you ever, you know, turning 50, does that sort of, do you ever think in those terms of like, oh, like this is a life. So I'm just starting to do that. I'm like, oh, this is like a finite journey that I'm on.
For sure.
Like, it's not like, oh, yeah, I'll go, I'll just do, like, gigs in town, and then I'll go on the road, and, like, I'll just do that for the next forever. I'm like, right. Oh, no, that's not how it works. Also, right. I'm getting tired.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
sure.
I'm starting to, like, whine about playing, you know, things like, but do you ever think like
that? Oh, yeah, all those things, you know, you wonder. But I think, like, being artists, like, you're used to being a creative problem solver and figuring out what's next anyway. We've done it our whole lives, so like that's not going to stop because we're a certain age. You just
right.
I think you have those skills. If anything, they're better.
But I do
think about how we're in the second half or even final third. I remember even at a family party, my nephews and niece were, it was like the kids table, you know, and they were like from 8 to 14 maybe. And I just had this feeling that I was interrupting them. Like when I went over, I just wanted to like talk to them, you know, and just visit with them. But I it wasn't like, they were very polite and welcoming and we talked, but I had a sense that like, they'd rather just like talk, maybe they're talking about video games or whatever they're doing. But I felt like the older uncle kind of insinuating myself into
it. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I've noticed that as well with my nieces and nephews, where there was this, you know, for a long time I was like, oh, cool Uncle Dave, he's fun and stuff, and we can just do whatever, you know, we'll have fun all day long. And then now it's like, I'm like, oh, I'm now, I come, walk down the basement, they're all playing, everyone stops, they tolerate me for a couple of minutes, and I go back upstairs.
Yes.
I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that shift.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, and that's what adults became.
Yeah, yeah.
And like now I'm, you know, and my brother will tell me things like, you're not the cool uncle anymore. I'm like, what do you mean? I thought I'll always be the cool. Like, they're like, no, they like Uncle Rob because he has money. Like he has visible, he has nice cars, and
yeah.
Like you live in an apartment, and like he, and I'm like, so then I just went from like feeling sad to, I'm like, fuck them. Like,
right, that's right.
Fuck them. Like, you're not judging me. Like, I'm just getting over my parents judging me. You can't.
Right. Can't start a whole new cycle.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I've had that. Yeah, like my, because I think you sound a lot healthier than I am with regards to aging and everything. But because I had my therapist say to me recently, because I think I have these ideas that like, I guess I'll just morph into my dad at some point or something, even though our lives nothing we've done is very similar. And then my therapist said to me recently, he's like, no, like you're not you're just gonna be old Dave. And I was like, oh yeah. But like you were saying, he's like, you'll just figure out like you, as you always have. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right, I'm not gonna start like wearing like a fedora and a field jacket or whatever. Like,
right. But you can. That's an
I
option.
Can.
You know?
The option is there.
Yeah.
What do you do? You've been all over. What do you have any, where's the most bizarre place or sort of surprisingly best place?
I would say
in the world that you've done.
I did a tour of the Middle East.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
like military
was,
or just, oh wow.
No, this was through. I don't know if you know the guys who did the Axis of Evil tour after 9/11. There was a bunch of Arab American comedians. So it was like Ahmed Ahmed, Maz Jobrani, Dean Obadalla. A bunch of guys formed this tour called the Axis of Evil tour, and they had put out a special in the States, and I think that special went viral in the Middle East on YouTube. So all of a sudden, these guys who were like solid headliners in the States were like stars in all over the Middle East. So they were booking these tours. So they did that for a number of years. And then I think it got to the point they were going probably like twice a year or something.
Oh, wow.
They needed to bring some fresh blood. So they asked me, and they brought a bunch of us, even though we were not Arab American. They just started bringing other comedians over. I went with like James Smith, who's Australian.
Oh yeah,
and lived here for a while.
So is he back in Australia?
He's back in Australia. Yeah,
Because I haven't seen him in forever.
Yeah, yeah. So James, yeah, he was a great guy. He and I did that tour together, and Angelo Sarukas, who's a Greek Canadian guy, I think. So there was a whole bunch of us that did a number of cities throughout and countries throughout the Middle East. But when you said like surprising and surprisingly good, I couldn't help but think of like we did Amman. There was the Amman Comedy Festival in Jordan.
Oh wow!
And the crowds were amazing. The King Jordan was there.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's like young and cool.
Uh-huh.
That was wild. We did Cairo and Alexandria in Egypt. And, you know, we're talking about like 3,000 Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I remember asking like Dean and Maz and Ahmed, like what should I do? Like, what are they going to understand? Like my material about, you know, being a music teacher, or are they going to understand like this or that? And they're like, just do your act. They kept saying it, like, just do your act. And I was like, are they trying to set me up to like bomb? But sure enough, like I honestly would not have known if I didn't know where I was on stage. It was like a great crowd. A lot of young people who had been educated at American universities and stuff like that, and couldn't have been more enthusiastic or appreciative. And that's another thing. I mean, maybe you've found that with international shows, how grateful they are. There isn't like kind of it's not routine, you know?
Yeah.
Like some of these Americans, certainly New York, that it's taken for granted.
Yeah.
You know, when they see a comedy show in Cairo or whatever, they're thrilled. And they can't do enough for you. So it's a two-way street. It, like, they're so appreciative, and it takes you out of like maybe some of your jadedness and some of the things that you take for granted.
And it's interesting. Like, did you find like any things? Because one of the things I used to fear is that sort of thing. Like, oh, like what's going to work? What's not going to work? Or are there certain? And I used to like try to figure it out beforehand.
Yeah.
And then, and I wouldn't like this to happen a lot, but then like, there's like the feeling of like going like, oh, I can't wait to do this bit that I've been working on that's been going really well in New York. And then you realize like one word is completely off to them. Mm-hmm. And it's enough to like I had this sort of like long thing where I talk about getting a gyro, which is even mispronounced, I realized, like, but it's sort of the Cleveland pronunciation of Euro. And so I was telling this story about getting a gyro that, like, you know, was kind of, I was so psyched. So I was like, oh, it's worked out really well. They're going to love it. And they were just staring at me. And then afterwards, and it's long, it's like 8 minutes, 10 minutes maybe. And finally, after the show, and I was just like, fuck, like, what? What happened? Like, but it's one of those things, like, once you start, like, I'm like, I'm not going to bail on it. I'm just going to plow through. Like, I can't just bail on this.
Yes.
And then afterwards, the guy's like, oh, I seem like you were talking about a kebab. And, but gyro here is like, kind of like a food stamp, I guess. So, like, I was talking about this, like, food stamp that was running was like is so he's like I figured out what you were talking about halfway through, but I think everyone just had no fucking clue. And it was like, I was like, oh, that was, in retrospect, that was really entertaining what just happened, but like, I don't want it to happen again. but I started like, it would just be so excruciating, but then I was like, oh, that's kind of a much more fun way to find out is just stand in front of a full room of people and just have them just be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
And you feel that energy in the room.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. And sometimes I think the more I've done it, I've gotten more comfortable at like recognizing and saying like, do you guys know what I'm talking about right now? Because then, you know, like it opens up that dialogue of, then they can be a little bit of the authority too of like, oh, we call it this or whatever. You know what I mean? And it's funny how you make those split second decisions in the course of a set of like, well, like you said, even bailing on it midway or not doing it all together.
Mm-hmm.
As a performer, at least I usually feel so much better if I take that chance, you know, because on the drive home or whatever, if I didn't do it, even if it went great, I feel like I cheated myself, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. I chose the cowardly path. Just, I was in Montreal the other night, and like, I had like all these new jokes I wanted to try out, and then I just kind of was like, I'm just gonna stick with stuff I know is gonna go reasonably well. Yeah. And then afterwards, I was like, well, what the fuck did I come here for? Like,
right?
If I'm just like kind of running, you know, it's good to do, you know, the show, but I was like, I just kind of felt like, oh, I didn't.
Yeah, that's didn't a do constant, the thing. Constant battle, you know. Yeah, you almost have to like really have that game plan solid before you set foot in the venue, you know, so that you're mentally, because if you're kind of halfway, it's easy, like once you're up there, it's easy to bail.
Yeah, it's easy to go like, oh, I want them to like me. That's my, I want them to like, please like me. And what did it was like, I have this bit about Guitar Center, and which is not a new thing. I've been, you know, doing it for a few months, and then I got up there and I did the first line of it, and then right away I was like, oh, do you guys don't have Guitar Center, do you? Because I could just tell they were like, because in America, like, I just a line about, I can tell right away if they're the recognition, and they were, right. And I was like, yeah, they're like, no, we don't have it, and I was like, I didn't know, like, what, I was just like, this is fucking not gonna, there's no way I can dig myself out, because it's based on, like, at least having driven past guitars, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a joke about Shen Yun, you know, the Chinese dance troupe that, like,
yeah.
The advertising is, like, ubiquitous around New York. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of big cities. Like, so I've done the joke, even in, like, I did it Baltimore, Philadelphia. So, like, big cities where this show goes, the joke is just how I feel like I'm being stalked by this production. You know, they won't stop until I go see it, you know. But then I did it in, like, Connecticut, in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and there was, like, it was that kind of, like, we don't know what you're talking about. Maybe because it's not a place where you walk around. Like, in New York, you walk around. I mean, I see them in coffee
shops. It's everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
And then also, I've done this, and I know I'm wrong, and I can't even think what was the sort of meditation or the practice that is not Shen Yun, but like that people were being like punished for in China. Do you know what I'm talking about, Chris? Mm-hmm. Where there'd be people protesting the punishment that was happening in China for, I can't remember what it's called.
It's like a martial art thing, or not Tai Chi or something?
No. It's, I can't remember.
Practicing a religion, or
yeah, it's like a meditation.
Okay.
that people, Chris is, are you googling, Chris?
Yeah.
And there's just horrible punishments being handed out for it in China. And then I had this phase where I was like confused, where I was like, oh, Shen Yun, they've made a show out of that thing. I can't, but if he can think, yeah, I was like good for them. And then one day I realized, I was like, oh, this is totally separate, but all of this is meaningless unless we can figure out what. Yes, that's it. Falun Gong.
Dafa.
Yeah, that's it. Do you remember there'd always be like people like in Bryant Park,
activists.
Yeah. And in Times Square and stuff.
Yes, and they would have kind of posters outlining the abuse and oppression.
Yeah, there was a brief period where I was blurring that and Shen and into one, and I was like, "This is, how did they go from the protest to the show?" What a fucking idiot I am. I'm a complete idiot.
They made it into a dance troupe.
You
know, I flashed back to when I was in the Middle East. One joke that was kind of a litmus test that, like, kind of for me, removed any kind of worry was at the time. Obama had just been elected, and I had a joke about how not only is he the first black president, but it's the end of white presidents forever, because you know what they say, you know, and I wouldn't finish the thought, you know, I was just, when I did the joke here in the States, I would say, because you know what they say, and people would just kind of laugh or clap or whatever. So I did that joke there, and people got it, like the once you go black thing. Like, you know, as soon as I said, you know what they say, they started laughing and clapping. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wow, like I thought for sure that would be like an American phrase or, you know, just something that wouldn't translate.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah, that for me was kind of like the confirmation of...
Oh, don't. It's probably all right. We can let that, the screen die.
That's all right.
It'll survive.
Yeah, yeah. So that was just another example of like, you know, you always have these little things of like, and sometimes you're like mid-joke when you realize like, oh, the end of this, you know, is something specific to whatever. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And you kind of try to edit on the run. But that was like a pleasant surprise when... They just burst into laughter, you know, like the way any crowd would.
Mm-hmm. And we have to. Chris does some work on this. You have a new podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit me.
It's called A Little Bit Me.
Which is hilarious.
Thank you.
And I'm jealous of it because like you most of it is you.
It turns out it's just a lot. Yeah. 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 You know, when I decided to do it. I was trying to like reflect on like what was the thing that scared me most,
mm-hmm.
and that I kind of decided that the thing that scared me most was to do it majority myself. You know, just kind of stream of consciousness, make some notes, things I want to talk about, and then see where it goes. So I was scared by that because I just felt as though like how am I going to fill an hour doing that? You know. And is it going to be entertaining at all? But yeah, like I've taken to it, and I've done 8 of them now, and it's kind of almost like a meditative, reflective things. And funny things do come up and stuff, but it's almost just kind of assessing like life and life in comedy and you mm-hmm. know, all that stuff.
And you call some random people.
I do. I have I have what I call there's different segments. So one is grading my marriage. One is cooking with Ted. If I'm you know, I've been on a kind of a cooking.
Oh
line.
Yeah.
So and then there's the catch up where I randomly call a comedian friend and they don't know the call's coming. So sometimes I catch them and like I called Tig Notaro and she was in the midst of a meeting or on her way. But she picked up.
She grabbed it.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. So then we used that audio, too. If she's like, oh, I would love to, but can we do it another time? Or whatever. and then, you know, obviously sometimes you do get through. And then we just talk for like 15 minutes. And it's nice because they're not expecting the call. And it's kind of just, you know, you're just talking about whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's a little less formal than if, like, you plan an interview. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the phone call aspect because I feel like when someone calls me now or when I call someone, like I assume like they'll probably pick up because they must assume something horrible is happening.
Yes, it's true. And that's another thing I realize is like I never call anybody. I mean, maybe family, but I don't call any of these comedian friends that I'm calling for my podcast.
Yeah.
And that was another kind of struggle of like, oh, am I kind of like abusing our friendships or is it an imposition in some way or kind of, you know, just bad form? But everybody picks up and I ask them, you know, is it okay? And everybody says, yeah, so.
Well, I get excited when I get, if it's a number I have in my phone, I'm like, oh, what? Something really, and it's usually just someone who's like, I'm tired of texting, let's yes. pick somewhere for lunch.
Yes.
It's like an annoyed Todd Berry or something. Like, where, come on.
Yes.
Where do you want to go?
Who I just called yesterday. So, yeah. He's on the latest one.
How did that go?
Great, great. Yeah. Todd's so funny. Because actually, he was another one that I had called, and I think he was in the midst of doing something. So, like, maybe in the second episode, I had called Todd, but then just this one, I called again and he picked up. So we did it. It was fun.
Nice.
I mean, it was pure Todd. You know, he's yeah. annoyed. He's doing other things. He was building a box for his cat.
Oh, his cat. Yeah, his cat. I had lunch with him the other day. The cat. Wait. So you mentioned. So you've been married for a little over a year.
Yep.
How's it going? Without being invasive.
No,
in
not
the
at
general.
All. No, it's great. You know, this is a woman that we knew each other like 12 years ago and dated.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend, Hollis James, who I mentioned earlier, we did stand-up as a duo and went to college together, he introduced us. So we dated, and I loved her then and kind of thought she was the one. But we broke up, and kind of almost 10 years went by. And then she texted me a few years back. And she had been traveling around, you know, and I kind of lost touch. Like, it also was like a conscious decision, because I knew I loved her. There was a conscious decision of like, all right, let me not like look at her social media. Let me not, you know, let me move on.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. And, you know, years went by. And then when she reached out.
Did you hang on to her phone number? Or did you delete it?
I deleted it, but I recognized it.
Oh, okay.
When I got the text from her saying, like, you know, hi, how are you? I'm in New York. Do you want to... She was doing an art show, actually, in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So we went to the art show. Then we went for coffee and stuff. And it was just like 10 years had gone by. We were both in a good place. I was a little wary initially because I didn't want to be like... All right, I know I love her, but I, you know, like the easy thing to do will be to just jump back in with both feet. So I was a little bit, as best I could, put my guard up, but you know, I loved her, and also she was ready and kind of expressed that to me too, and expressed some regrets about the way things had happened in the past. Uh-huh. So it was just the right time, and we really, you know. Despite my inclination to not jump in with both feet, I did.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, so it was great. So we dated for a couple of years and then just got married. So it's been a full circle kind of thing. And yeah, in a weird way, it's almost kind of affirmation of that. Oh, and I know it's just because it had a happy ending. But I felt it had had a happy ending already, just in that I had gotten over it and moved on with life and dated other people, and I was mm-hmm. happy. But it had an even happier ending that she came back around, and it was affirmation that, like, you know, like, I guess that my gut was right. My gut was right that she was the one. My gut was right that I had to move on. So it was just like a really great life lesson in all of those respects. And now just being married to her is fun.
Mm-hmm. And she's not in show business?
No, she is an artist and a psychic medium. So
oh,
she
wow.
Is, yeah, she does mediumship.
That's awesome.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, so that's really cool too, because she has her own thing that's fascinating to me.
Oh, wow.
That, you know... yeah, we talk about both the art and the mediumship. And yeah, for me, it's like she's just one of the most interesting creative people I know, and funny and all that. So it's nice to be around her.
And how is it like with her being a medium? Does that play into, like, can she pick up on things with you in a way that's different from, like, a regular person?
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, she is very intuitive. Yeah, and also just in terms of, like, you know, like, that gift of, like, things... Like, when recently, long-time New York comedian legend William Stevenson passed away, a guy who had been emceeing for, you know, my whole career. Like a real stalwart of the scene. And... My wife Madeline said, you know, William Stevenson came to me and said, tell Ted Shawarma. Now, Shawarma was the Comedy Cellar. They serve shawarma. That's like their staple, you know, for years. And I had, you know, eaten shawarma with William at the Comedy Cellar. And my wife, mind you, didn't even know what shawarma was. She's like, I know the word, but what is shawarma? I'm like, it's meat. It's like meat, you know. It's like Middle Eastern kind of meat. And the seller would serve it. So, when she heard it, she said, what? And he laughed and said, shawarma. Tell him shawarma. And so she told me that. And yeah, so that's just one example of like a lot of like.
And did she tell you this before or after you had heard that he died?
This was after.
Right after.
Yeah, I knew. Yeah, she knew and I knew that he had passed, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so... That's wild. And she does readings for people, you know, and stuff like that. And yeah, it's almost like, you know, it's in a weird way, it's an intersection of, like, grief counseling and... yeah, I guess like it's psychology, and it's just channeling, you know, these, because it's not like she says it just, you know, it comes like if
somebody, like an energy or something.
Yeah, and in a weird way I find it similar to stand-up, you know. And she says, like, she's like, I'm sure that stand-ups are psychics, like, because, like, you see crowd work or stuff, you see, like, people just, like, they know somebody's story, like, are they, the couple has been to, you guys are married, or you guys, you know, they just nail something specific about what they do for a living, or, you know, and I've seen that happen a lot. I saw Chris DiStefano had a special recently, and he said to a guy in the front row, you have a Yankees tattoo somewhere on your body, and the guy lifts up his on his forearm, you know. So like those type of things, are fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, I think that's interesting you say that, like, because I always played in bands before I started doing comedy, and like with bands, you know, I'd be like afraid to sing and things like, you know, and have a few beers. And then when I started doing comedy, I was like, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to have like drinking be a part of the equation. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I drink, but you know, after the show. So, but the, you know, very quickly, yeah, I learned. I was like, oh, like you, the energy that you feel, like if you can feel, there's something over in this corner. Like even if you're not even hearing it, you can feel this. And I find like even if I were to have like one drink, like it's like this barrier is up where I can't feel any of that stuff anymore.
Like absolutely,
it's just like. So, and then I hate, like, and you know, on the rare occasion where like something, you know, I don't know, like I wound up having dinner and I ended up having a drink or something, like, you know, extremely rare that would happen, like, and then, you know, and like not enough time has passed or whatever, and I get up on stage and I'm like, oh, I can still feel that glass of wine from a couple hours ago, and I hate this because I can't feel any of that energy.
Yeah,
it's such a weird.
I agree.
Thing.
Yeah, it impedes it. Like, it's, even if it's a fraction of a second, you feel a disconnect. And so much of that is important to like navigating a room and navigating energy, and like you were saying before with a crowd. A crowd like has this kind of personality, you know, that is like this amalgamation of energy, and you can sense those things in the room. Like you can sense, like if there's a table that is, you know, sometimes it's obvious, like there's a drunk person or there's a disruption or somebody speaking too loud or whatever. But I also kind of almost wonder if sometimes there are things that we can't really understand, that the energy of a room or a group of people. Like there are factors that are not like apparent to the eye, that there's something wrong with the energy in here, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge, is like trying to figure it out, and you know, and sometimes, you know, there's almost not, you know, it might not work out, you know, like it's just like there's nothing you can do, or whatever. But like, I remember like from very early on, after I started, like when you, because you know, a lot of times you just see a comedian just be like, oh fuck you guys, like just just be like, you guys suck,
right?
And that's the problem, you guys are a shitty bunch of people. And I always just be like, no, like your whole thing is to figure out what's going on, like, and you have 10 or 15 minutes to do it. And like, and but so often you just see someone be like, oh fuck you guys, like,
absolutely.
And just, but I'm like, oh, that you're just, that's no fun.
Right.
Just,
sometimes too, like if I say, like when you say the obvious thing of like, is something wrong? Like, did something happen in here that I'm not a part of? Or, you know, like just almost like breaking, like addressing, even if you don't do it perfectly, addressing like, what's, you know, sometimes I say, like, we don't need to do this. Like, if there's more important things, like, that you guys need to talk about, like, we can, you know. And then sometimes what will happen is, like you said before, someone will come over to me afterwards and say, yeah, you know, like, before you got on stage, this or that happened, or, you know, something really weird happened where this guy, like, they kicked somebody out, or there was a fight, you know, like, and yeah. Something you were completely unaware of, but the room was weird, you know? So I've had that happen. So sometimes I think just the best thing you can do is spew out whatever you're recognizing and say, like, something's wrong here. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's you guys. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Todd Barry, I think he's always good at that. Like, I've done shows with him where, and I think you're great at it. I think you always have, like, a real, like comfort level with the room and the audience and all.
Thanks.
That. But that, I think that's an amazing skill to be able to go up there and be like, because I've seen nights like that where, like, you know, everyone is just going up there and eating it, and then it's the person who, like, is like, what is happening, and then they're the ones to turn it around, to address it.
Yeah, because it's not just your act. It's like you've got to be present, right? And you've got to be, like, in the moment or whatever, you know, all those things that they say. But it's funny you mentioned Todd, because my wife always says, Todd's psychic. Like, because when you see his crowd work shows, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he would never say, yeah, I'm psychic, but he is. But it's funny, like, the way he channels certain things in some of those special, like the special about the crowd work shows and stuff.
Yeah.
He really has his finger on the pulse sometimes.
Well, I'm going to go, you and Todd are psychics. Thank you so much.
My pleasure,
Ted, for coming over.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed my delightful conversation with Ted Alexandro. And I encourage you to run, don't walk. Listen to Ted Alexandro's new podcast, A Little Bit Me, which is on iTunes and wherever else you get incredible podcasts. It's a great podcast. And as much to his credit, he doesn't rely on guests. Like, he makes phone calls, but he doesn't rely on guests like I do to keep the chatter coming. He has things to say, and so he's brilliant all by his lonesome, just sitting there by himself talking. And I always have to get a guest to help me out, because I'm a simple man. But Ted's podcast is great. Go check it out and go see him live and delight in the hilarious wonder of Ted Alexander if you have not already. Thank you for listening. I'm wrapping it up. You probably picked up on that at this point. More action music, please, Chris. Thank you. Echoes where you see fit. And speaking of Chris, I want to thank my partner in crime, the brains behind the operation, technical whiz, promotional guru. I'm running out of adjectives and nouns to put together. But Chris Gersbeck, without him, I would be just sitting here, just yelling out my window probably, but he's helped elevate the whole thing. Thanks to my sweet dog, Lucy. We have a bonus episode or two, a Lucy-specific one, coming up that I think, if you like dog sounds, well, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. Anyway, until next time, please support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Dave Hill, and so we can grow this into a podcasting monolith, or who knows what a monolith is, do we even know? I mean, I guess we do, but okay, that's it. I don't want to keep just rambling, and so if you're listening while driving, you might crash your car. I'm going to turn the light on, and I'm going to hit stop, and I'm going to let you go live your life, you attractive person. And I can't do nothing but close my eyes. Oh no, no, since you've been gone, not you.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.